Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this hour of the Kids Zone here on the Radio Reading Service. This is Mark Wiesner.
And Jan Wiesner.
And today we take ourselves back into the book and probably to the conclusion of the book that we've been sharing with you entitled Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry, a novel written by Mildred D. Taylor. But before we get ourselves back into it, Jan's here to give us a little bit of a recap of where we left off.
If you remember, Cassie's father had gotten a lot of the neighbors to put in orders for their food and supplies to him, and he would drive to Vicksburg and get them, bypassing the Wallace's store that was right there in the community, because the Wallaces had been guilty of killing a black man they knew. And that was the only type of punishment the Wallaces were going to get, because the Wallaces were white. Well, they found out that a lot of the people were withdrawing from having their supplies received from Vicksburg because they had been threatened by the plantation owner that they did sharecropping with, that he would have them put on the chain gang if they didn't stop doing that. So he made one last ride to Vicksburg, and on the way back, he had taken Mr. Morrison, is the man who's been helping him out at his place, and his oldest son, Stacy. And on the way back, a pickup truck pulled up to their wagon, which had lost a wheel, and had a gun, and they shot Cassie's dad, and he fell, and the horse bolted, and the wagon ran over his leg and broke it. So the shot itself only grazed his head. It's the broken leg that has provided the most difficulty for him. And it's been a long recovery, and he's still unable to really work. But he was able to go to a church picnic, which everyone was enjoying. And then along came TJ with his new friends, some white boys that are trouble. And they came into the church picnic area, and they almost threatened people and then left. So we're wondering how that's going to work out.
So, we are beginning chapter 11, which is the last chapter, and it begins with a poem where the actual title of Roll Thunder, Hear My Cry comes from. So, let us begin. And the poem is, Roll Thunder, Hear My Cry, Over the Water, By and By, Old Man Coming Down the Line, Whip in Hand to Beat Me Down, But I ain't gonna let them turn me round. The night whispered of distant thunder. It was muggy, hot, a miserable night for sleeping. Twice I had awakened hoping that it was time to be up, but each time the night had been total blackness with no hint of a graying dawn. On the front porch, Mr. Morrison sat singing soft and low into the long night, chanting to the approaching thunder. He had been there since the house had darkened after church, watching and waiting as he had done every night since Papa had been injured. No one had ever explained why he watched and waited, but I knew it had to do with the Wallaces. Mr. Morrison's song faded, and I guessed he was on his way to the rear of the house. He would stay there for a while, walking on cat's feet through the quiet yard, then eventually returning to the front porch again. Unable to sleep, I resigned myself to await his return by counting states. Miss Crocker had a big thing about states, and I sometimes found that if I pretended that she was naming them off, I could fall asleep. I decided to count the states geographically rather than alphabetically. That was more of a challenge. I had gotten as far west as the Dakotas when my silent recitation was disturbed by a tapping on the porch. I lay very still. Mr. Morrison never made sounds like that, and there it was again. Cautiously, I climbed from the bed, careful not to awaken Big Ma, who was still snoring soundly, and crept to the door. I pressed my ear against the door and listened then, slipped the latch furiously, and darted outside.
Boy, what are you doing here?
I hissed.
Hey, Cassie, why'd you keep it down?
Whispered TJ, invisible in the darkness. Then he tapped lightly on the boy's door again, calling softly.
Hey, Stacy, come on. Wake up, will you? Let me in.
The door swung open and TJ slipped inside. I pulled my own door closed and followed him.
I'm in trouble, Stacy,
he said.
I mean, I'm really in trouble. Well, that ain't nothing new,
I remarked.
What are you coming here for?
Whispered Stacy icily.
Go get R.W. and Melvin to get you out of it.
In the darkness, there was a low sob, and TJ, hardly sounding like TJ, mumbled,
They the ones got me into it. Where's the bed? I gotta sit down.
In the darkness, he groped for the bed, his feet dragging as if he could hardly lift them.
I ain't no bed,
I explained as his hands fell on me. There was a deep sigh. Stacy clinked on the flashlight, and TJ found the bed, sitting down slowly and holding his stomach as if it were hurt.
What's the matter?
Stacy asked, his voice wary.
R.W. Melvin,
whispered TJ.
They hurt me bad.
He looked up, expecting sympathy. But our faces, grim behind the light Stacy held, showed no compassion. TJ's eyes dimmed. Then, undoing the buttons in his shirt, he pulled the shirt open and stared down at his stomach. I grimaced and shook my head at the sight.
Lord, TJ?
Stacy exclaimed in a whisper.
What happened?
TJ did not answer at first, staring in horror at the deep black-blue swelling of his stomach and chest.
I think something's busted,
he gasped finally.
I hurt something awful. Why'd they do it?
Asked Stacy. TJ looked up into the bright light.
Help me, Stacy. Help me get home. I can't make it by myself. Tell me how come they did this to you. Cause I said I was going to tell what happened.
Stacy and I looked at each other, then together leaned closer to TJ.
Tell what?
We asked. TJ gulped and leaned over, his head between his legs.
I'm sick, Stacy. I got to go home before my daddy wake up. He say I stay away from that house one more night. He going to put me out, and he mean it, too. He put me out. I got no place to go. You got to help me. Tell us what happened.
TJ began to cry.
But they said they'd do worse than this if I ever told. Well, I ain't about to go nowhere unless I know what happened,
said Stacy with finality. TJ searched Stacy's face in the rim of ghostly light cast by the flashlight. Then he told a story. After he and the Sims left Great Faith, they went directly into Strawberry to get the pearl-handled pistol. But when they arrived, the mercantile was already closed. The Sims said that there was no sense of coming back for the pistol. They would simply go in and take it. TJ was frightened at the thought, but the Sims assured him that there was no danger. If they were caught, they would simply say they needed the pistol that night, but intended to pay for it on Monday. In the storage room at the back of the store was a small open window through which a child or a person as thin as TJ could wiggle. After waiting almost an hour after the lights had gone out in the Barnett's living quarters on the second floor, TJ slipped through the window and opened the door, and the Simses entered, their faces masked with stockings and their hands gloved. TJ, now afraid that they had something else in mind, wanted to leave without the pistol, but R.W. had insisted that he have it. R.W. broke the lock of the gun case with an axe and gave TJ the much longed for gun. Then R.W. and Melvin went over to a wall cabinet and tried to break off the brass lock. After several unsuccessful minutes, R.W. swung the axe sharply against the lock and it gave. But as Melvin reached for the metal box inside, Mr. Barnett appeared on the stairs, a flashlight in his hands, his wife behind him. For a long moment, no one moved or said a word as Mr. Barnett shone the light directly on TJ, then on R.W. and Melvin, their faces darkened by the stockings. But when Mr. Barnett saw the cabinet lock busted, he flew into a frenzied action, hopping madly down the stairs and trying to grab the metal box from Melvin. They struggled, with Mr. Barnett getting the better of Melvin until R.W. whopped Mr. Barnett solidly on the head from behind with a flat of the axe, and Mr. Barnett slumped into a heap upon the floor as if dead. When Mrs. Barnett saw her husband fall, she dashed across the room and flailed into R.W., crying,
"You done killed Jim Lee! You done killed him!"
R.W., trying to escape her grasp, slapped at her, and she fell back, hitting her head against one of the stoves, and did not move. Once they were outside, T.J. wanted to come straight home, but the Simpsons said they had business to take care of and told him to wait in the back of the truck. When T.J. objected and said that he was going to tell everybody it was R.W. and Melvin who had hurt the Barnetts unless they took him home, the two of them lit into him, beating him with savage blows until he could not stand, then flung him into the back of the truck and went down the street to the pool hall. T.J. lay there for what he thought must have been an hour before crawling from the truck and starting home. About a mile outside of town, he got a ride from a farmer headed for Smellings Creek by way of Soldiers Road. Not wanting to walk past the Simpsons' place for fear R.W. and Melvin had taken the Jackson Road home, he did not get out at the Jefferson Davis School Road intersection, but instead crossed Soldiers Bridge with the farmer and got out the intersection beyond the bridge and walked around, coming from the west to our house.
T.J., was them Barnett's dead?
Asked Stacy when T.J. grew quiet. T.J. shook his head.
I don't know. They sure look dead. Stacy, anybody find out, you know what they'd do to me?
He stood up, his face grimacing with pain.
Stacy, help me get home,
he pleaded.
I'm afraid to go there by myself. R.W. and Melvin might be waiting. You sure you ain't lying, T.J.?
I asked suspiciously.
I swear everything I told y'all was the truth. I admit I lied about telling on your mama, but I ain't lying now, I ain't.
Stacy thought a moment.
Why don't you stay here tonight? Papa will tell your daddy what happened. He won't put... No!
Cried T.J., eyes big with terror.
Can't tell nobody. I gotta go.
He headed for the door, holding his side. But before he could reach it, his legs gave way and Stacy caught him and guided him back to the bed. I studied T.J. closely under the light, sure that he was pulling another fast one. But then he coughed and blood spurted from his mouth. His eyes glazed, his face paled, and I knew that this time T.J. was not faking.
You're bad hurt,
Stacy said.
Let me get Big Ma and she'll know what to do.
T.J. shook his head weakly.
My mama, I'll just tell her them white boys beat me for no reason and she'll believe it. She'll take care of me. But you go waking your grandmama and your daddy will be in it. Stacy, please, you my only friend. Ain't never really had no true friend but you. Stacy?
I whispered, afraid of what he might do. As far back as I could remember, Stacy had felt a responsibility for T.J. I never really understood why. Perhaps he felt that even a person as despicable as T.J. needed someone he could call friend, or perhaps he sensed T.J.'s vulnerability better than T.J. did himself.
Stacy, you ain't going, are you?
Stacy wet his lips, thinking. Then he looked at me.
You go on back to bed, Cassie. I'll be all right. Yeah, I know you're going to be all right, because I'm going to tell Papa.
I cried, turning to dash for the other room. But Stacy reached into the darkness and caught me.
Look, Cassie, it won't take me but 25 or 30 minutes to run down there and back. Really, it's all right. You as big a fool as he is, then.
I accused frantically.
You don't owe him nothing, especially after what he'd done to Mama.
Stacy released me.
He's hurt bad, Cassie. I gotta get him home.
He turned away from me and grabbed his pants. I started after him. Then I said,
Well, you ain't going without me.
If Stacy was going to be a fool and go running out into the night to take an even bigger fool home, The least I could do was make sure he got back in one piece.
Cassie, he can't go. Go where?
Piped little man, sitting up. Christopher John sat up too, yawning sleepily.
Is it morning? Why y'all doing up?
Little man questioned. He blinked into the light and rubbed his eyes.
TJ, that you? What you doing here? Why y'all going? Nowhere. I'm just going to walk TJ home,
Stacy said.
Now go back to sleep.
Little man jumped out of bed and pulled his clothes from the hanger where he had neatly hung them.
I'm going too,
he squealed.
Not me,
said Christopher John, lying back down again. While Stacy attempted to put little man back to bed, I checked the porch to make sure that Mr. Morrison wasn't around, then slipped back to my own room to change. When I emerged again, the boys were on the porch, and Christopher John, his pants over his arm, was murmuring a strong protest against this middle-of-the-night stroll. Stacy attempted to persuade both him and little man back inside, but little man would not budge, and Christopher John, as much as he protested, would not be left behind. Finally, Stacy gave up, and with TJ leaning heavily against him, hurried across the lawn. The rest of us followed. Once on the road, Christopher John struggled into his pants, and we became part of the night. Quiet, frightened, and wishing just to dump TJ on his front porch and get back to the safety of our own beds, we hastened along the invisible road, brightened only by the round of the flashlight. The thunder was creeping closer now, rolling angrily over the forest depths and bringing the lightning with it, as we emerged from the path into the deserted Avery yard.
Wait till I get inside, will you?
Requested TJ.
Ain't nobody here,
I said sourly.
What you need us to wait for? Go on, TJ,
said Stacy.
We'll wait. Thanks, y'all,
TJ said. Then he limped to the side of the house and slipped awkwardly into his room through an open window.
Come on, let's get out of here,
said Stacy, herding us back to the path. But as we neared the forest, little man turned.
Hey, y'all, what? Look over there. What's that?
Beyond the Avery house, bright lights appeared far away on the road near the Granger mansion. For a breathless second, they lingered there, then plunged suddenly downward towards the Averys. The first set of lights was followed by a second, then a third, until there was a half a dozen sets of headlights beaming over the trail.
What's happening?
Cried Christopher John. For what seemed an interminable wait, we stood watching those lights drawing nearer and nearer before Stacy clicked off the flashlight and ordered us into the forest. Silently, we slept into the brush and fell flat to the ground. Two pickups and four cars rattled into the yard, their lights focused like spotlights on the Avery front porch. Noisy, angry men leaped from the cars and surrounded the house. Caleb Wallace and his brother Thurston, his left arm hanging akimbo at his side, pounded the front door with their rifle butts.
Y'all come on out of there,
called Caleb.
We want that thieving, murdering kid of y'all's.
Stacy,
I stammered, feeling the same nauseous fear I had felt when the night men had passed. And when Papa had come home, shot and broken.
What they gonna do? I don't know,
whispered Stacy, as two more men joined the Wallaces at the door.
Why ain't R.W. and Melvin?
I exclaimed.
What are they doing there?
Stacy quickly muffled me with the palm of his hand as Melvin thrust himself against the door in an attempt to break it open, and R.W. smashed a window with his gun. At the side of the house, several men were climbing through the same window TJ had entered only a few minutes before. Soon the front door was flung open from the inside, and Mr. and Mrs. Avery were dragged savagely by their feet from the house. The Avery girls were thrown through the open windows. The older girls, attempting to gather the younger children to them, were slapped back and spat upon. Then quiet, gentle Claude was hauled out, knocked to the ground and kicked.
Claude,
whimpered Christopher John, trying to rise, but Stacy hushed him and held him down.
We gotta get help,
Stacy rasped, but none of us could move. I watch the world from outside myself. Then TJ emerged, dragged from the house on his knees. His face was bloody. Where he had tried to speak, he cried with pain, mumbling his words as if his jaw were broken. Mr. Avery tried to rise to get him, but was knocked back. "Look what we got here," one of the men said, holding up a gun. "That pearl-handled pistol from Jim Lee's store."
"Oh, Lord,"
Stacy groaned.
"Why didn't he get rid of that thing?"
TJ mumbled something we could not hear, and Caleb Wallace thundered,
"Stop lying, boy, because you're a whole lot of trouble. You was in there, Miss Barnett, when she come to and got help, said three black boys robbed their store and knocked out her and her husband. And R.J. and Melvin Sims seen you and them two other boys running from behind that store when they came to town to shoot some pool." "But it was R.J. and Melvin."
I started before Stacy clasped his hand over my mouth again. "Now, who was them other two? And where's that money y'all took?" Whatever TJ's reply, it obviously was not what Caleb Wallace wanted to hear, for he pulled his leg back and kicked TJ's swollen stomach with such force that TJ emitted a cry of awful pain and fell prone upon the ground.
"Lord Jesus, Lord Jesus,"
cried Mrs. Avery, wrenching herself free from the men who held her and rushing towards her son.
"Don't let them hurt my baby no more. Kill me, Lord, but not my child."
But before she could reach TJ, she was caught by the arm and flung so ferociously against the house that she fell, dazed, and Mr. Avery, struggling to reach her, was helpless to save either her or TJ. Christopher John was now sobbing distinctly now.
"Cassie,"
Kiss Stacy whispered,
"you take little man and Christopher John and y'all."
The headlights of the two more cars appeared in the distance, and Stacy immediately hushed. One of the cars halted on the Granger Road, its lights beaming aimlessly into the blackness of the cotton fields. But the light car, Lee car, came crazy and fast along the rutted trail towards the Avery house. And before it had rolled to a complete stop, Mr. Jameson leaped out. But once out of the car, he stood very still, surveying the scene. Then he stared at each of the men, as if preparing them to the courtroom, then said softly, "You all decide to hold court here tonight?" There was an embarrassed silence. Then Caleb Wallace spoke up. "Now look here, Mr. Jameson, don't you come messing in this thing."
"You do,"
warned Thurston hotly.
"We'll just likely take care of ourselves and you too tonight."
An electric tenseness filled the air. But Mr. Jameson's placid face was unchanged by the threat. "Jim Lee Barnett and his wife are still alive. Y'all let the sheriff and me take the boy. Let the law decide whether or not he's guilty."
"Where's Hank?"
someone asked.
"I don't see no law."
"That's him up in Harlem Granger's," Mr. Jameson said with a wave of his hand over his shoulder. "He'll be down in a minute. Now leave the boy be."
"For my money, I say we do it now,"
a voice cried.
"Oh, ain't no need to waste good time and money trying him."
A crescendo of ugly hate rose from the men as a second car approached. They grew momentarily quiet as the sheriff stepped out. The sheriff looked uneasily at the crowd as if he would rather not be here at all. Then at last at Mr. Jameson. "Where's Harlan?" asked Mr. Jameson. The sheriff turned from Mr. Jameson to the crowd without answering him. Then he spoke to the men. "Mr. Granger sent word by me that he ain't going to stand for no hanging on his place. He say y'all touch one hair of that boy's head while he's on this land, he's going to hold every man here responsible." The men took the news in grim silence. Then Caleb Wallace cried, "Then why don't we do something else, go somewhere else? I say what we ought to do is take him down on the road and take care of that big black giant of a person at the same time."
"And why not that boy he working for, too?"
yelled Thurston.
"Stacy,"
I gasped.
"Hush."
A welling affirmation rose from the men. I got me 3 new ropes, exclaimed Caleb.
New? How come you want to waste a new rope on them?
Asked Melvin Sims. Big as that one is, an old one might break. There was chilling laughter, and the men moved towards their cars, dragging TJ with them.
No!
Cried Mr. Jameson, rushing to shield TJ with his own body.
Casey,
Stacy whispered hoarsely.
Casey, you gotta get Papa now. Tell him what happened. I don't think Mr. Jameson can hold them. You come too. No, I'll wait here. I ain't going without you.
I declared, afraid that he would do something stupid like trying to rescue TJ alone.
Cassie, look, go on, will you please? Papa will know what to do. Somebody's got to stay here in case they take TJ off into the woods somewhere. I'll be all right. Well, please, Cassie, trust me, will you?
I hesitated.
You promise you won't go down there by yourself? Yeah, I promise. Just get Papa and Mr. Morrison for they hurt them some more.
He placed the unlit flashlight in my hand and pushed me up, clutching little man's hand. I told him to grab Christopher Johns, and together the three of us picked our way along the black path, afraid to turn on the flashlight for fear of its light being seen. Thunder crashed against the corners of the world, and lightning split the sky as we reached the road. But we did not stop. We dared not. We had to reach Papa. Chapter 12. When we reared the house, the dull glow of a kerosene lamp was shining faintly from the boys' rooms.
You suppose they already know?
Christopher John asked breathlessly as he ran up the lawn.
Don't know about that,
I said.
But they know we ain't where we're supposed to be.
We ran noisily up onto the porch and flung open the unlatched door. Mama and Big Ma, standing with Mr. Morrison near the foot of the bed, turned as we entered, and Big Ma cried,
Lord, there he is! Where have you been?
Mama demanded, her face strangely stricken.
What do you mean, running around out there at this time of night?
Before we could answer either question, Papa appeared in the doorway, dressed, his wide leather strap in hand.
Papa,
I began.
Where's Stacy? He down to TJ's, Papa.
That boy got a mighty groan, Papa said, clearly angry. I'm going to teach all of you about traipsing off in the middle of the night, and especially Stacy. He should know better. If Mr. Morrison hadn't seen this door open, I suppose you would have thought he was getting away with something, like TJ. Well, y'all going to learn right here now. There ain't going to be no TJs in this house.
But, Papa, they hurt Claude.
Christopher John cried, tears streaming down his cheeks for his injured friend.
And TJ, too,
echoed little man, trembling. What? Papa asked, his eyes narrowing. What you all talking about?
Papa, they hurt them real bad, and...
I could not finish. Papa came to me and took my face in his hands. What is it, Cassie girl? Tell me. Everything. I poured out everything about TJ's breaking into the mercantile with the Sims, about his coming in the night fleeing the Sims, about the coming of the men and what they had done to the Averys, about Mr. Jameson and the threat of the men to come to the house to get him and Mr. Morrison. And Stacy's still down there? Papa asked when I had finished.
Yes, sir, but he hid in the forest. They don't know he's there.
Papa spun around suddenly. Gotta get him out of there, he said, moving quicker than I had thought possible with his bad leg. Mama followed him into the room, and the boys and I followed her. From over the bed, Papa pulled out his shotgun.
David, not with the shotgun. You can't stop them like that.
Got no other way, he said, stuffing a box of shells into his shirt pocket.
You fire on them and they'll hang you for sure. They'd like nothing better.
If I don't, they'll hang TJ. This thing's been coming a long time, baby, and TJ just happened to be the one foolish enough to trigger it. But fool or not, I can't stop, sit by, and let them kill that boy. And if they find Stacy...
I know, David, I know, but there's got to be another way. Some way they won't kill you, too.
Seems like they might be planning to do that anyway, Papa said, turning from her. They come here, no telling what'll happen, and I'll use every bullet I got before I let them hurt anybody in this house. Mama grabbed his arm.
Get Harlan Granger to stop it. If he says so, they'll go on home.
Papa shook his head. Them cars had to come right past his house to get to the Averys. And if you intended to stop them, he'd stop them without me telling him so.
Then,
said Mama,
force him to stop it.
How? Asked Papa dryly. Hold a gun to his head? He left her then, going back into the boys' rooms. You come in, Mr. Morrison? Mr. Morrison nodded and followed Papa onto the porch, a rifle in his hands. Like a cat, Mama sprang after them and grabbed Papa again.
David, don't use the gun.
Papa stared out as a bolt of lightning splintered the night into the dazzling brilliance. The wind was blowing softly, gently towards the east. Perhaps, he started, then was quiet.
David?
Papa touched Mama's face tenderly with the tip of his fingers and said, I'll do what I have to do, Mary, and so will you. Then he turned from her and with Mr. Morrison disappeared into the night. Mama pushed us back into her room where Big Ma fell upon her knees and prayed a powerful prayer. Afterwards, both Mama and Big Ma changed their clothes. Then we sat very quiet as the heat crept sticky and wet through our clothing and the thunder banged menacingly overhead. Mama, her knuckles tight against her skin as she gripped the arms of her chair, looked down upon Christopher John, little man, and me, our eyes wide awake with fear.
I don't suppose it'd do any good to put you to bed,
she said quietly. We looked up at her. She did not mean to have an answer. We gave none, and nothing else was said as the night minutes crept past and the waiting pressed so heavily upon us as the heat. Then Mama stiffened. She sniffed the air and got up.
What is it, child?
Big Ma asked.
You smell smoke?
Mama said, going to the front door and opening it. Little man, Christopher John, and I followed, peeping around her in the doorway. From deep in the field, where the land sloped upward towards the Granger Forest, a fire billowed, carrying eastward by the wind.
Mama, the cotton!
I cried.
It's on fire! Oh, good Lord!
Big Mama explained, hurrying to join us.
That lightning done that! If it reaches those trees, it'll burn everything from here to Strawberry.
Mama said. She turned quickly and ran across the room to the side door.
Stay here,
she ordered, opening the door and fleeing across the yards of the barn.
Mama, you better get some water,
she yelled over to her shoulder. Big Ma hurried into the kitchen with Christopher John, little man, and me at her heels.
What are we going to do, Big Ma?
I asked. Big Ma stepped onto the back porch and brought in the wash tub and began filling it with water.
We gotta fight that fire and try and stop it before it reached them trees. Stand back now, all the way so you don't get wet.
In a few minutes, Mama returned, her arms loaded with sacks of burlap. She quickly threw the sacks into the water and ran back out again. When she returned, she carried two shovels and several more sacks.
Mama, what you gonna do with all that? It's for fighting the fire,
she replied hastily.
Oh,
the little man said, grabbing for one of the shovels as I started to take the other.
No, you're going to stay here.
Big Ma straightened from where she was bent, dipping the sacks into the water.
Mary, child, don't you think it'd be better to take them with us?
Mama studied us closely and bit her lower lip. She was silent for several moments. Then she shook her head.
Can't anyone get to the house from the Grangers without our seeing them? I'd rather they stay here than risk them near the fire.
Then she charged each of us, a strange glint in her eyes.
Cassie, Christopher John, Clayton Chester, hear me good. I don't want you near that fire. You set 1 foot from this house and I'm going to skin you alive. Do you hear me now?
We nodded solemnly.
Yes, Mama. And stay inside. The lightning's dangerous. But, Mama,
said Christopher John,
you're going out there in that lightning. It can't be helped, baby,
she said.
The fire's got to be stopped.
Then she and Big Ma laid the shovels across the top of the tub and each took a handle to it. As they stepped out of the back door, Mama looked back at us, her eyes uncertain, as if she did not want to leave us.
Y'all be sure to mind now,
ordered Big Ma gruffly, and the two of them, carrying the heavy tub, crossed the yard towards the garden. From the garden they would cut through the south pasture and up to where the cotton blazed. We watched until they were swallowed by the blackness that lay between the house and the fire, then dashed back to the front porch, where the view was clear. There we gazed transfixed as the flames gobbled the cotton and crept dangerously near the forest edge.
That fire, Cassie,
said Christopher John.
It going to burn us up? No, it's going the other way, toward the forest. Then it's going to burn up the trees,
said Christopher John sadly. Little man tugged at my arm.
Papa and Stacy and Mr. Morrison, Cassie, they in them trees.
Then iron-willed little man began to cry, and Christopher John, too, and the three of us huddled together, all alone.
Hey, y'all all right?
I gazed out into the night, seeing nothing but the gray smoke and the red rim of the fire in the east.
Who's that? It's me,
said Jeremy Sims, running up the lawn.
Jeremy, what you doing out this time of night?
I questioned, taken back to see him.
It ain't night no more, Cassie. It's near dawn. But what you doing here?
Repeated little man with a sniffle.
I was sleeping up in my tree like I always do. On a night like this?
I exclaimed.
Boy, you are crazy.
Jeremy looked rather shamefaced and shrugged.
Well, I was, and I smelled smoke. I knew it was coming from this away, and I was afraid it was y'all's place, so I run in and told my pa, and he and me, we come on up here over an hour ago. You mean you've been out there fighting that fire?
Jeremy nodded.
My pa and R.W. and Melvin, too.
R.W. and Melvin? Little man, Christopher John and I exclaimed together.
But they was...
I poked Christopher John in the silence.
Yeah, they got there for us, and there's a whole lot of men from town out there, too.
He looked puzzled.
I wonder what they's all doing out there. How bad is it?
I asked, ignoring his wonderings.
It get much of the cotton?
Jeremy nodded absently.
Funny thing, that fire come up from that lightning and struck one of them wooden fence posts, I reckon, sparked that cotton. Must have burned a good quarter of it. Y'all lucky it ain't headed this way. But the trees,
said Christopher John.
It gonna get the trees, ain't it?
Jeremy looked out across the field, shooting his eyes against the brilliance of the fire.
They trying like everything to stop it. Your papa and Mr. Granger, they got... Papa? You seen Papa? He all right?
Cried Christopher John breathlessly. Jeremy nodded, looking down at him strangely.
Yeah, he's fine. And Stacy, you seen him?
Inquired little man. Again, Jeremy nodded.
Yeah, he got out there, too.
Little man, Christopher John, and I glanced at each other, relieved just a bit, and Jeremy went on through eyeing us somewhat suspiciously.
Your papa and Mr. Granger, they got them men digging a deep trench across that slope, and they say they're going to burn that pasture grass from the trench back to the cotton. You think they'll stop it?
I asked. Jeremy stared blankly at the fire and shook his head.
Oh, I don't know,
he said finally.
Sure hope so, though.
There was a violent clap of thunder and lightning flooded the field.
One thing would sure help, though, is if that old rain would come down now.
All four of us looked up at the sky and waited a minute for the rain to fall. When nothing happened, Jeremy turned and sighed.
I better be getting back now. Miss Logan said she left y'all here, so I come to see about you.
Then he ran down the slope, waving back at us as he went. When he got to the road, he stopped suddenly and stood very still. Then he put out his hands, hesitated a moment, and spun around wildly as if he were mad.
It's raining, y'all,
he cried.
That old rain a coming down.
Little man, Christopher John, and I jumped from the porch and ran barefooted onto the lawn, feeling the rain fine and cool upon our faces, and we laughed, whooping joyously into the thundering night, forgetting for the moment that we still did not know what had happened to TJ. When the dawn came peeping yellow-gray and suited over the horizon, the fire was out and the thunderstorm had shifted eastward after an hour of heavy rain. I stood up stiffly, my eyes tearing from the acrid smoke, and looked out across the cotton to the slope, barely visible in the smoggish dawn. Near the slope where once cotton stalks had stood, their brown bowls popping with tiny puffs of cotton. The land was charred, desolate, black, still steaming from the night. I wanted to go and take a closer look, but for once Christopher John would not budge.
No,
he repeated over and over again.
I ain't going. But what Mama meant was that she didn't want us near the fire, and it's out now.
Christopher John set his lips firmly together, folded his plump arms across his chest, and was adamant. When I saw that he would not be persuaded, I gazed again at the fields and decided that I could not wait any longer.
Okay, you stay here then. We'll be right back.
Ignoring his protest, little man and I ran down to the wet road.
He really ain't coming,
said little man, amazed, looking back over his shoulder.
I guess not,
I said, searching for signs of the fire in the cotton. Farther up the road, the stalks were singed, and the fine gray ash of the fire lay thick upon them, and the road and the forest trees. When we reached the burnt-out section of the field, we surveyed the destruction. As far as we could see, the fire had lined and extended midway up the slope, and had been stopped at the trench. The old oak was untouched. Moving across the field slowly, mechanically, as if sleepwalking, was a flood of men and women dumping shovels of dirt onto fire patches which refused to die. They wore wide handkerchiefs over their faces, and many wore hats, making it difficult to identify who was who. But it was obvious that the ranks of the firefighters had swelled from the 24 townsmen to include nearby farmers. I recognized Mr. Lanier by his floppy blue hat, working side by side with Mr. Sims, each oblivious of the other, and Papa near the slope waving orders to two of the townsmen. Mr. Granger, hammering down smoldering stalks with the flat of his shovel, was near the south pasture where Mr. Morrison and Mama were swatting the burning ground. Near the fence, a stocky man, masked like the others, searched the field in robot fashion for hidden fire under the charred skeletons of broken stalks. When he reached the fence, he leaned tiredly against it, taking off his handkerchief to wipe the sweat and soot from his face. He coughed and looked around blankly. His eyes fell on little man and me staring up at him. But Caleb Wallace seemed not to recognize us, and after a moment he picked up a shovel and started back toward the slope without a word. Then little man nudged me.
Look over there, Cassie. There go Mama and Big Ma.
I followed his pointing finger. Mama and Big Ma were headed home across the field.
Come on,
I said, sprinting back up the road. When we reached the house, we dragged our feet across the wet lawn and cleaned them, and rejoiced Christopher John on the porch. Rejoined Christopher John on the porch. We looked a bit frightened, sitting there all alone, and was obviously glad we were back.
Y'all all right?
He asked.
Of course we're all right,
I said, plopping on the porch and trying to catch my breath.
What'd it look like?
Before either little man or I could answer, Mama and Big Ma emerged from the field with Stacy, the sacks now blackened remnants in their hands. We ran to them eagerly.
Stacy, you all right?
I cried.
What about TJ and Claude?
Stammered Christopher John. And little man asked,
Papa, Mr. Morrison, ain't they coming?
Mama held up her hand wearily.
Babies, babies.
Then she put her arms around Christopher John.
Claude's fine, and honey, and...
she said, looking down at little man.
Papa and Mr. Morrison, they'll be coming soon. But TJ, Mama...
I persisted.
What about TJ?
Mama sighed and sat down on the steps, laying the sacks on the ground. The boys and I sat down beside her.
I'm going to go in and change, Mary,
Big Ma said, climbing the steps and opening our bedroom door.
Miss Fanny gonna need somebody.
Mama nodded.
Tell her I'll be down soon as I get the children to bed and things straightened out here.
Then she turned and looked down at little man, Christopher John, and me, eager to know what had happened. She smiled slightly, but there was no happiness in it.
TJ's all right. The sheriff and Mr. Jameson took him into Strawberry. But why, Mama?
Asked little man.
He done something bad? They think he did, baby. They think he did. Then they didn't hurt him no more?
I asked. Stacy looked across at Mama to see if she intended to answer. Then, his voice hollow and strained, he said,
"Mr. Granger stopped them and sent them up to fight the fire."
I sensed that there was more, but before I could ask what, Christopher John piped,
And Papa, Mr. Morrison, they didn't have to fight them old men. They didn't have to use the guns." "Thank the Lord, no,"
said Mama.
"They didn't. The fire come up,"
said Stacy,
"and Mr. Morrison came and got me, and then men come down here to fight the fire, and didn't nobody have to fight nobody." "Mr. Morrison come to get you alone?"
I asked, puzzled.
"Where was Papa?"
Stacy again looked at Mama, and for a moment they both were silent. Then Stacy said,
"Y'all know he couldn't make that slope with that bad leg of his."
I looked at him suspiciously. I had seen Papa move on that leg. He could have made that slope if he wanted to.
"All right now,"
Mama said, rising.
"It's been a long, tiring night, and it's time all were in bed."
I reached for her arm.
"Mama, how bad is it really? I mean, is there enough cotton left to pay the taxes?"
Mama looked at me oddly.
"Since when did you start worrying about taxes?"
I shrugged, then leaned closer towards her, wanting an answer, yet afraid to hear it.
"The taxes will get paid, don't you worry,"
was all the answer she gave.
"Now let's get to bed." "But I want to wait for Papa, Mr. Morrison,"
protested little man.
"Me too,"
yawned Christopher John.
"Inside."
All of us went in, but Stacy and Mama did not make him. But as soon as she was disappeared into the boys' room to make sure little man and Christopher John got to bed, I returned to the porch and sat beside him.
"I thought you went to bed,"
he said.
"I want to know what happened over there. I told you, Mr. Granger, I come and got Papa and Mr. Morrison like you asked,"
I reminded him.
"Now I want to know everything happened after I left."
Stacy sighed and rubbed his left temple absently, as if his head were hurting.
"Ain't much happened, excepting Mr. Jameson tried talking to them men some more, and after a bit they pushed him out of the way and stuffed TJ into one of their cars. But Mr. Jameson, he jumped into his car and lit out ahead of them and drove up to Mr. Granger's and swung his car smack across the road so couldn't nobody get past him. Then he starts laying on his horn. You go over there?"
He nodded.
"By the time I got across the field to where I could hear what was going on, Mr. Granger was standing on his porch and Mr. Jameson was telling him that the sheriff or nobody else was about to stop a hanging on that flimsy message he sent up to the Averys. But Mr. Granger, he just stood there on his porch looking sleepy and bored, and finally he told the sheriff, 'Hank, you take care of this. That's what folks elected you for.' Then Caleb Wallace, he leaps out of his car and tries to grab Mr. Jameson's keys. But Mr. Jameson threw the keys right into Mrs. Granger's flower bed and couldn't nobody find them. So Melvin and R.W. came up and pushed Mr. Jameson's car off the road. Then them cars was about to take off again when Mr. Granger comes running off the porch hollering like he's lost his mind. 'There's smoke coming from my forest yonder,' he yells. 'Dry as that timber is, a fire catch hold, it won't stop burning for a week. Give that boy to Wade like he wants and get up here.' And the folks started running all over the place for shovels and things. Then all of them cut back down the road to the Averys and through them woods over to our place. And that's when Mr. Morrison got you?"
Stacy nodded.
"He found me when I followed them men back up to the woods."
I sat very still, listening to the soft sounds of the early morning, my eyes on the field. There was something which I still did not understand. Stacy nodded towards the road.
"Here come Papa and Mr. Morrison."
They were walking with slow, exhausted steps towards the drive. The two of us ran down the lawn, but before we reached the road, a car approached and stopped directly behind them. Mr. Jameson was driving. Stacy and I stood curiously on the lawn, far enough away not to be noticed, but close enough to hear. "David, I thought you should know," said Mr. Jameson. "I just come from Strawberry to see the Averys." "How bad is it?" Mr. Jameson stared straight at the road. "Jim Lee Barnett. He died at 4 o'clock this morning." Papa hit the roof of the car hard with his clenched fist and turned towards the field, his head bowed. For a long, long minute, none of the men spoke. Then Mr. Morrison said softly, the boy. How is he? Doc Graydon says he's got a couple of broken ribs and his jaw's broken, but it'll be all right, for now. I'm going to his folks to tell them and take them to town. Just thought I'd like to tell you first. Papa said, I'll go in with him. Mr. Jameson pulled off his hat and ran his fingers through his hair, damp against his forehead. Then, squinting, he looked over his shoulder at the field. Folks thinking, he said slowly, as if he did not want to say what he was about to say. Folks thinking that lightning struck that fence of yours and started the fire. He pulled at his ear. It's better, I think, that you stay clear of this whole thing now, David. And don't you give anybody cause to think about you at all, except that you got what was coming to you by losing a quarter of your cotton. There was a cautious silence as he gazed up at Papa and Mr. Morrison, their faces set in grim, tired lines. Or somebody might just get to wondering about that fire.
Stacy,
I whispered.
What's he talking about? Hush, Cassie,
Stacy said, his eyes intent on the men.
But I want to know.
Stacy looked around at me sharply, his face drawn, his eyes anxious, and without even a murmur from him, I suddenly did know. I knew why Mr. Morrison had come for him alone. Why Mr. Morris Jameson was afraid for Papa to go into town. Papa had found a way, as Mama had asked, to make Mr. Granger stop the hanging he had started, the fire. And it came to me that this was one of those known and unknown things, something never to be spoken, not even to each other. I glanced at Stacy, and he saw in my eyes that I knew and understood the meaning of what I knew, and he said simply,
Mr. Jameson's going now.
Mr. Jameson turned around in the driveway and headed back towards the Averys. Papa and Mr. Morrison watched him leave. Then Mr. Morrison walked silently up the drive to do the morning chores, and Papa, noticing us for the first time, stared down at us, his eyes bloodshot and unsmiling. I thought you all would have been in bed by now, he said.
Papa?
Stacy whispered hoarsely.
What's going to happen to TJ now?
Papa looked out at the climbing sun, a round red shadow behind the smoggy sheet. He didn't answer immediately, and it seemed as if he were debating whether or not he should. Finally, very slowly, he looked down, first at me, then at Stacy. He said quietly, he's in jail right now.
And what then?
Asked Stacy. Papa studied us. He could possibly go on the chain gang.
Papa, could he die?
Asked Stacy, hardly breathing. Son.
Papa, could he?
Papa put a strange hand on each of us and watched us closely. I ain't never lied to y'all. You all know that.
Yes, sir.
He waited, his eyes on us. Well, I wish I could lie to y'all right now.
No, oh, Papa, no.
I cried.
They wouldn't do that to old TJ. He can talk his way out of just about anything. Besides, he ain't done nothing that bad. It was them Simpsons. Tell them that.
Stacy, shaking his head, backed away, silently, not wanting to believe, but believing still. His eyes filled with heavy tears. Then he turned and fled down the lawn across the road into the shelter of the trees. Papa stared after him, and holding me tightly to him.
Oh, Papa, does it have to be?
Papa tilted my chin and gazed softly down at me. All I can say, Kissy Girl, is that it shouldn't be. Then, glancing back towards the forest, he took my hand and led me to the house. Mama was waiting for us as we climbed the steps, her face wan and strained. Little Man and Christopher John were already in bed, and after Mama had felt my forehead and asked if I was all right, she sent me to bed as well. Big Ma had already gone to the Averys, and I climbed into bed alone. A few minutes later, both Mama and Papa came to tuck me in, talking softly in fragile, gentle words that seemed about to break. Their presence softened the hurt, and I did not cry. But after they had left, I saw Papa through the open window disappear into the forest after Stacy, The tears began to run past and heavy down my cheeks. In the afternoon, when I awakened, or tomorrow or the next day, the boys and I would still be free to run the red road, to wander through the old forest, and sprawl lazily on the banks of the pond. Come October, we would trudge to school as always, barefooted, grumbling, fighting the dust and the mud and the Jefferson Davis school bus. But TJ would never do it again. I had never liked TJ, but he had always been there, a part of me, a part of my life, just like the mud and the rain, and I had thought he'd always be there. Yet the mud and the rain and the dust would all pass. I knew and understood that. What had happened to TJ in the night, I did not understand, but I knew that it would not pass, and I cried for those things which had happened in the night and would not pass. I cried for TJ, and for the land. Well, that brings us to the close of Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry, a novel written by Mildred Teller, a Newbery Honor book. And Mildred Teller was born in Jackson, Mississippi, and grew up in Toledo, Ohio. After graduating from the University of Toledo, she served in the Peace Corps in Ethiopia for 2 years, and then spent the next year traveling throughout the United States, working and recruiting for the Peace Corps. At the University of Colorado's School of Journalism, she helped create a Black Studies program and taught in the program for 2 years. Ms. Teller has worked as a proofreader and an editor and as a program coordinator for an international house and a community-free school. She now devotes her time to her family, writing, and what she terms the family ranch in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains. Well, with that, we bring this hour to a close, and this very strong story. So we look forward to being with you next week. It's always a pleasure to be with you each Saturday afternoon. This has been Mark Wiesner.
And Jan Wiesner.
And we wish you a great week ahead.
Goodbye.
Take care.